Hi, I'm Rob.
And I'm Rob.
And this is Ask Rob and Rob.
Welcome to Ask Rob and Rob, that reassuringly familiar part of your week where you know what you're going to get. You're going to get two questions, shortly followed by two answers. We've got a couple of really good questions coming up today, so we'll get to those in just a sec. But first, Rob, a quick reminder of how people send in their questions.
Yeah, you can go to our website super easy and leave a message there. That's over at propertyhub.net/ask. Or you can pick up the old dog and bone and give us a call on 013 808 0035. That's 013 808 0035. Whatever your preferred medium of communication, we do not mind as long as it's a good question. And Ben has very much met that criteria with the first one.
Hi, Rob. Ben here. My question is around renegotiating the purchase price after a survey has been completed. So I'm just about to purchase my second buy-to-let, which, by the way, would have only really been possible through your content and books, etc. So thank you very much for that. So the survey was overall okay. The overall summary was that there is no specific barrier for purchase here, but there were some issues that were flagged up that were advised that I should seek further consultation on. Damp and a roof were the two things that were highlighted the most. And now I've gone away and got external contractors to come in and survey that work. The quote is rather large. It's coming in at around £11,000. So my question is, what do I do now? Do I knock off or try and knock off that entire cost from the purchase price? Or is there going to be some kind of middle ground here? The property I bought was a good offer, probably actually above market value at the time of purchase. So any significant costs are going to make this, you know, a bad deal. And I don't want to be in that position. So any advice around this from your own experience or from others that you know would be really appreciated. Looking forward to hearing from it. Thanks, Ben.
Ben, thank you for your question. Again, it's one of those great questions that it's going to help you, but help so many other people as well, because people are going to end up in this situation at some point or another if they continue to build their portfolio. And it's not uncommon for you to do a survey and for work to be flagged. I mean, it would be weird if it was a new build, but on a property that's not a new build, then these things happen. And now you have a decision to make. So the first port of call and the easy and obvious one would be to go back to the vendor and try to negotiate and knock that £11,000 off. Now, if you manage to negotiate that and then get the majority, if not all that £11,000 knocked off, then great. Push on, do the deal. You're back to where you started. Yes, you now have to do the work and get that arranged, which is a bit of hassle. But overall, the deal itself is pretty much as it was. Now, what happens if they are not willing to negotiate or not willing to negotiate to a point that you're happy with or satisfied with? Well, as difficult as this is, you've already given the answer. You believe that with this extra £11,000 worth of work, that this is a bad deal. If this is an investment, who would choose to do a bad deal? The only reason why you would choose to do a bad deal is if you emotionally made a bad decision. And while that might sound daft to a lot of people listening, yeah, of course, why would you want to do it? For you living it, it's quite tough because people become emotionally attached to the deals. And it's easy to see why, because you've spent a lot of time finding this property. You know, you would have done viewings and research. Then you would have gone through all the offer stages. A lot of time and effort has gone in. And when you do all that, it makes it more difficult to walk away from a deal. You start to develop something that we call internally deal bias, where you start to try and talk yourself into the deal because you're emotionally attached to it for one reason or another. Don't do that. Walk away. If you can't get the money off, and it is, to quote your words, a bad deal, then don't do it. It might not be easy, but it's important. There are lots of other properties out there, and it is possible to do a good deal. But if you've got a choice, why would you choose to do a bad deal? So as tough as it is, I hope that if you can't negotiate, you are brave enough to walk away. But I also hope that you have a bit of luck and are able to negotiate. And if the vendor truly believes that you are going to walk away, that might also strengthen your hand. So best of luck. It's not easy, but it's the right thing to do.
Okay, let's move on to our next question now. This is from Alex.
Hi, Rob and Rob. My name is Alex. Been listening to your podcast now for several years. Love every single one of them. And because of listening to your podcast, me and my wife actually took the plunge back in January 2020, bought our first property, and we're now just complete on our fourth. So it's going very well for us. So thank you so much for everything that you put out there. It really does help us and always informative and keeps us up to date with what's going on. I've got a question for you. On the back of the information you've been providing lately with inflation and obviously like investment for long term, I'm in a bit of a sticky situation. I've got £10,000 that's sitting in the Skipton LISA, which is where the government give you 25% of any contributions you make. But the interest rate's only 0.85%. So on the back of the 0.85% with inflation, I'm obviously losing money every year. Do I stick with it? Because although it's only 0.85%, the money that the government are contributing against it makes it worthwhile and it matures in about sort of 25 years, I think. Or do I pull the money out, which means I will lose the 25%, so I'll have £7,500. And do I put it into something, as you mentioned before, like something like maybe gold that's obviously always increasing in value or something else? So it'd be really good to sort of hear your advice on this one and what I should really do with it. Thank you very much and look forward to hearing your answer.
Alex, first of all, well done. That's completing your fourth property. That's awesome. And in a pretty short space of time as well. So that's really good to hear that's going well for you. In terms of your lifetime ISA, I think you're missing a trick here. And I'll explain why that's the case. So sure, so far, the investment return that you've been making is not very exciting. But that 25% contribution is pretty good. So being able to make a guaranteed 25% return on your money, not many investments where you can do that. So if you pull the money back out, you, like you've said, lose that 25% contribution again. So you're giving up that return. And of course, there are situations where it might be worthwhile to do that. So if there is an absolutely amazing once-in-a-lifetime investment that is through, say, capital growth going to absolutely obliterate that 25% return over the long term, maybe there would be a case for doing it. But seeing as we're not talking about a huge amount of money, it's probably not going to make or break when you can make your next investment. It would be a shame to give up on that 25% and effectively hand it back purely because the investment return that you're making within that product isn't very good. Unfortunately, you don't need to, because within a lifetime ISA, you can invest in a cash ISA or stocks and shares. So you're talking about 0.85%. I'm presuming that that is a cash ISA and that is the return that you're getting on that cash. And that, of course, is not very good. In real terms, that is significantly negative. But there's nothing to stop you from transferring that ISA into a stocks and shares product. And of course, it's possible to do far worse than that with stocks and shares. You could lose a heck of a lot of money if you're not careful. But it does mean that you've got options. You're not restricted to just having that derisory cash return. You mentioned gold. I'm not saying that you should invest in gold. Don't know if it's a good thing to do or not. But there's probably even some kind of gold tracker ETF type thing that you could access within a stocks and shares ISA. So you could get the gold exposure that you want without foregoing your lifetime ISA. So I think it's important to say that if you are going for the stocks and shares option, you do need to do your research. You do need to be careful. But the great thing is, because you can't take the money out for another 20 odd years without losing that bonus. However, there can be a lot of volatility along the way. There can be times when you're significantly down. But you'd hope that if you make a decent investment choice, in 20 years' time, you'd be significantly better off than you are today. Whereas if you just keep it in the cash version, you can pretty much guarantee that you'll be worse off in the future. So I think, Alex, that's good news. You can keep your 25% bonus and invest in something a little bit more exciting as well.
So thank you, Ben. Thank you, Alex, for your questions. And thank you for listening. We'll reward that loyalty with a podcast on Thursday. It's called The Property Podcast. You should check it out. And of course, we'll be back on Tuesday, this time next week, with another Ask Rob and Rob. So until then, take care, have fun, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.